Welcome to this episode of the Ghost Bites podcast. I must thank you for being here. I have had some comments from people wanting this to come out at roughly the same time as the written article. Aside from the practical limitation of there being only one of me, unfortunately, the other thing is that in these videos and in these podcasts, I can also consider the results of the polls. And obviously those results are not available as Ghost Bites goes out. So that is one really big benefit to actually being able to do this a couple of days after each edition of Ghost Bites goes out. And I do hope that you will find value in it. Obviously, please do like, comment, and subscribe. It really does help grow the YouTube channel. Now, let's do Argent Industrial, where they have landed another offshore acquisition. And that's quite important because this has firmly been Argent's strategy in recent times. In the year ended March 2026, the South African operations were only 27% of group profit before tax, with the offshore business doing the rest. So roughly three quarters of profits are made offshore for Argent. Now, going offshore is no guarantee of success. Goodness knows we have many companies on the JSE where it's been quite the opposite. But Argent has made it work, because if you look at those FY26 numbers, offshore operations grew profit by 13.3%, and that's well ahead of South Africa at 8.3%. The market is enthusiastically supporting the strategy. The share price has done almost 40% over 12 months. So Argent quite happy to keep doing it, and why not? They've now pulled the trigger on another offshore deal. This is the acquisition of the Ramsden Group, a UK-based manufacturer of steel drums and wooden pallets, as well as reconditioned intermediate bulk containers. And this does bring a lot more diversification to Argent's group, which I think is great. They are acquiring it for 238 million rand. That's 10.8 million pounds. Of that price, around 55 million rand relates to the properties owned by the group, and the remaining 183 million rand is based on the profits after tax and a PE multiple of around 5.5 times. That is not a big PE multiple by hard currency standards in the UK, so I'm guessing that this is not the fastest growing business around, but that doesn't necessarily make it a bad acquisition, because at that sort of price point, Argent seems to have landed something quite interesting here, and they've got a good track record in offshore, and hopefully this will continue. Then we move across to Canada, where we find some happy news for Aspen, where they are getting ready for thinner clients and fatter profits. That's because regulatory approval has been received for Aspen's semaglutide. This is their GLP-1 generic, and obviously, as we know, GLP-1s make an absolute fortune, because whether people are willing to admit it or not, most people want to be thinner than they currently are. We know this because of the demand for GLP-1s, so there's no point in trying to debate it. Now, Aspen was a top pick for many people coming into 2026, and that's mainly because of how badly it did in 2025. Huge drop in value that year due to a major dispute and loss of volumes. The question now is the best of Aspen's rally behind them? That is really the debate here. And I actually posed that question to readers in the poll. And at the time of recording, 38% said the best is behind them, I'm not buying. And 62% said there's more in the tank, I'm long. So that is very interesting. That's actually more bullish than I would have expected here, because Aspen's business is actually not easy at all. And this is demonstrated by this latest news. So Health Canada has given regulatory approval to this thing, this generic GLP-1 injectable. Yes, that is great news for them. And yes, this means that they can help get a slice of the action that Novo Nordisk managed to create, because that patent has now obviously expired and that makes space for generics to come in. But the challenge is that Aspen's ability to supply the drug depends on the availability of the active pharmaceutical ingredient from Dr. Reddy's laboratories in India. There's currently a supply issue that, based on Bloomberg reports, is expected to last until at least late October. Now, therein lies the entire issue for Aspen. On one hand, they are reliant on regulators to give them the green light, and on the other, they are reliant on big pharma players for the ingredients so that they can run their contract manufacturing business. That is unfortunately a big part of why Aspen has actually been quite a disappointment if you take a multi-year lens over the past few years. But the share price did gain on this news. People obviously happy to see anything that looks like Aspen might be able to deal with some of its excess capacity and make some more money. Then we've got an assets under management update from the dynamic duo of Coronation and 91. For reasons I will truly never understand, Coronation is allergic to providing historical numbers in their updates on AUM. They always just give you the latest number. They never give you the previous year or the previous quarter. For a company that is so focused on investing, I must be honest, I don't understand why they put the bare minimum effort into these SENS announcements, but it is what it is. The only good thing I can say is at least they are consistent. Whether they have good news or bad news, they still make you go digging for the comparable. So at 30 June 2026 at Coronation, AUM was 778 billion rand, 4.3% higher than AUM at 31 March, which is pretty good going if you consider the global backdrop over the last quarter. It's also 5.5% up on their AUM a year ago in June 2025. Now, this certainly shows you that you cannot just take the movement over one quarter and extrapolate it, because most of that increase has happened effectively in the last quarter of the last 12 months. So that makes it quite a tricky thing to actually guess where things might go. And that's obviously because it just depends on broader market pricing. The share price is quite flat over the past 12 months, but thanks to a very big dividend yield, it takes the total return into the double digits. Now, in comparison, we have 91, and kudos to 91, they actually do bother to give us comparative numbers. It really does feel like I'm clapping for a bird to fly here, because this is such a ticket to the game thing to give comparatives. But anyway, we move on. And there are really three ways to grow AUM, and 91 is actually showing us the third way, which people generally don't talk about. So the first way is a general uplift in market prices. It's largely beyond the control of these firms, but of course, if they launch funds that do well, then they will enjoy the uptick in markets. Fine. The second is by attracting additional inflows. This is a function of a strong brand and a successful distribution network as well. The third way is through M&A. And at 91, they've been very busy, because over the past year or so, we saw Sanlam sell their active asset management business into 91 in exchange for shares in the group. That transaction was a major contributor to the substantial growth in 91's AUM over the past 12 months. AUM is up from £139.7 billion to £184 billion. So it really does dwarf Coronation, which, as you might remember, 778 billion rand plays £184 billion. 91 is several times larger than Coronation. Quarter-on-quarter growth gives us a cleaner view of things that doesn't have the M&A in it. And on that basis, AUM up by 7.1% between March and June. So also a strong quarter, even better than we saw at Coronation, but obviously there is a currency impact there, so just be careful. Either way, both names doing quite well at the moment, but I think the benefit of M&A particularly coming through there in 91. Then we move on to Prosus, the tech giant on the JSE. They will be paid over 40 billion rand for their remaining stake in Delivery Hero. This is because Uber is going to eat up the entire thing, and Prosus has given an irrevocable undertaking to Uber to sell their remaining 16.8% in Delivery Hero. This is directly related to the European Commission's approval of Prosus acquiring JustEatTakeaway.com. Prosus had to commit to actually getting out of their stake in Delivery Hero. It was quite vague. That to say, we will significantly reduce our stake of 26.5% at the time. I mean, you can figure out for yourself what significantly reduce means. Seems like they've actually just said, well, if Uber's going to come in and make an offer for the whole thing, then just take everything. Because obviously, it really doesn't make sense to hang on to a small stake. Uber's offer for Delivery Hero is a 151% premium to the 30-day VWAP before Prosus first announced the sale of 4.5% to Uber back in April this year. So they've done quite well here in terms of selling to Uber. But it does tell you that competition is going to heat up in this space, because if Uber is happy to pay a big price like that, it's for a reason. And Prosus is going to find it difficult to really make money out of JustEatTakeaway.com, which those of you who are following the company closely will know is a business that has been struggling. It is basically a turnaround story. Prosus has been promising the market that AI will get the job done. I certainly hope they will, because I'm long Prosus, so let's hope that is exactly what will happen. I did also have a slight laugh at what it must be like for the European Commission, knowing that Uber is actually their savior in terms of achieving competition in the space. Overall, the success of Prosus CEO Fabrizio Bluisi's tenure is largely going to depend on the successful implementation of this Just Eat Takeaway deal. It's a big decision to step into that space, sell down Delivery Hero. So they've gotten a nice price for it. Again, the benefit of doing this a few days after GhostBytes goes out is I now have the results of the poll as well, in which I asked readers what they would like to see Prosus do with the capital. And the answer was pretty clear here. Share repurchases, I just looked now while recording, 74% of respondents said please repurchase shares, 26% said reinvest in the ecosystems. Now that is quite a resounding message here to the board of Prosus. It will be interesting to see what happens. Then, last one for this episode, South32, they've just signed off on a strong FY26, and they are in a very important transition phase as well. So they've delivered their final quarterly report for the year ended June 2026. They exceeded production guidance for the year, and they enjoyed a really strong fourth quarter where sales volumes were up 15%. Now, there's a lot going on at this company. They have a new CEO, let's just start there. Matt Daly has taken the reins from Graham Kerr as of 1 July. They've also announced the disposal of the aluminium value chain business to Alcoa. They are investing heavily in Sierra Gorda, a key copper asset. There's also the construction of the Taylor Zinc Lead Silver project that has been going on for quite some time as well. And overall, the strategy at South32 is to generate 85% of their earnings from base and precious metals. They expect their current projects to increase production by 55%, so they are investing rather heavily here. And of course, it really helps when they can come to the market with numbers like these, with Sierra Gorda, for example, exceeding FY26 production guidance by 2%, and a number of other various good news stories in the group as well. But copper is where the market will pay attention. The copper price was 42% higher in FY26 versus FY25, so that's a pretty serious increase. To give you an idea of where the cash goes, FY26 saw a split of $292 million in dividends versus $35 million in share buybacks, so way more dividends than buybacks here. But CapEx, that's the really big number. That Taylor project soaked up $710 million in growth CapEx in FY26. That's just one project and 1 year. Quite amazing, these numbers. Share price is up around 35% in the past year. And as a reminder of just how cyclical mining can be, the increase over 3 years, just 1%, basically flat. Dividends didn't even save the three-year picture. Total return over that period, roughly 9%. Work that out as an annual rate and it's going to be roughly 3%, significantly less than a money market account at a bank. Of course, the risk of a money market account, very different to the risk of mining. So cyclical companies are always about timing the market, not just time in the market. Unfortunately, that's what makes them so tricky. That's it for this episode. I hope you are enjoying these. As I said, please do like, comment, subscribe on YouTube. And if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, then please do also add it to your podcast playlist so you will get notifications when this goes out. That's it from me.